You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
You know, absolutely. And today you're going to get a treat because we're going to actually go really far away. In a little bit, we're going to take you on a trip to Saipan. And just to show you how far and wide the territory is of the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. Anyway, but before we do, introduce you to our special friend from Saipan. Josh DeMello and I have a couple things to go over, mainly because as you've been reading in the paper the last couple of days, the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council meeting has finished and some press releases have come out. The most notable one, I guess, Josh, is to talk about the shallow set sword fishery is virtually done. Because why?
Because there is a limit, a hard cap, mm-hmm. on the number of loggerhead turtles that the fishery can interact with. And so that limit was reached on Tuesday.
And that's it. Boom.
They hit number 17 on the limit. So the National Marine Fisheries Service, that morning, I saw them outside calling all the fishermen saying, stop fishing, come back to port.
Yep. And that being said, there are other people that don't stop fishing that are out there. I mean, we're talking about our guys right now, but I mean, there's other people that will go to that area that are not under our control.
Oh, sure. Yeah. This fishery is the shallow set longline fishery.
Right.
And so they're fishing for swordfish.
Mm-hmm.
And so outside of the United States fisheries, there's actually other people out there fishing. They may be fishing for swordfish or they may be fishing for something else. But
they can't be prevented from fishing in that area.
Right.
But here, that's not the point I was trying to make. The point I was trying to make is that the longline fishery in Hawaii particularly, and we've talked about this a lot of times before, is the most looked at of all. As a matter of fact, some of the things that happen here in Hawaii, we use in other parts of the world to be in compliance with limits and type of gear and all of that.
Right, and the U.S. is always the big brother that everyone should look up to. So even though our 17 turtles cap that we have on the shallow set longline fishery is met, it doesn't mean nobody else is interacting with turtles.
Yeah. Now here's the other point too. When you talk about interacting, let's make sure people know that this is not a turtle coming up in pieces. A lot of times these turtles are released, they're live.
Right. And so all
and 17, that counts.
From what I understand, all 17 that were interacted with were released alive. So it's not like we're
killing. I'm so puzzled about
17.
That. You know. Yeah. What does that do to the market? I mean, Josh was just saying a while ago, he's talking about swordfish. Some of you call it shutome. It's one of the fish that travels the best. Restaurants across the world love it because it is so, that you can cook it in so many different ways, and it's firm, it's great protein, and that's going to be a while.
Right, and so the fishery won't open again until next year.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have whatever's on the shelf now and whatever's coming in on the boats that just got called back. So you'll see a bunch of swordfish probably on the block this week
and that's
into the beginning of next week, and you won't see it.
Okay,
anymore.
Now what about, there still will be a supply of swordfish, but it won't be from our area.
Right, so if you see it on the menu after March, I would guess that it's either coming from someone's frozen supply from other areas.
It's interesting, isn't it, that swordfish, they freeze pretty well. You know, for a species, they last a while if you freeze them, if you catch, you know.
Oh, sure. It's one of those fishes that travel well, and a lot of it is sent to the U.S. mainland, and even there, we make up over 50% of the swordfish that's used in restaurants on the mainland.
And that's because it is, not only is it firm and travel well, but it also is accepting of sauces. And, you know, these guys that, if you eat the fish without anything on it, it's kind of bland.
Oh, and people don't like to eat fishy-tasting fish, right?
Yeah, and this is it.
Right.
So you can make it taste whatever you like. Okay, so anyway, it's over. And I don't know how many of our fleet that affects, but I know it's probably at least about a dozen.
Yeah, it's somewhere around there.
Yeah.
The bad part is that some of those fishermen can't switch over to the deep set longline.
Because of gear.
Because of the gear, the size of the boat, and all this other stuff.
And the expense of the gear, too.
Right. And so normally around April, May, they start switching over anyway to the deep set or tunas. But there are some folks who are basically tied up for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and that, by the way, that can fluctuate. I remember, in fact, the last couple of years we reached that 17 a lot later.
Right.
You know, so this is it an anomaly that it's a little early?
Sometimes we just hit it, you know. Maybe it's some oceanographic systems or whatever, but we're actually going to be looking at this issue at a 177th council meeting that's going to be by teleconference in April, because there is a biological opinion that is supposed to be written to find what use the new information that's out there and perhaps change those limits.
Yeah, and you know, it's not to, they're not going to eliminate them. But change is important. And I think that science is a lot better. We could spend the whole program talking about this, but the actual way that they can interact and count and approximate is getting pretty good.
And I think it's a testament to management and science to be able to close a fishery and have these kind of counts and hard caps that allows for actual management of the fishery.
Some of the other things that came out of it, I do know that that some of the local folks are happy with some of the decisions being made, that it's going to help, you know, the local fisheries, coastal management, and some of the stuff. What would you say were one of the more important takeaways that you had from this session?
I think what I took away from it was that there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and there's a lot of, I guess, communication that has to happen between not just us and the fishermen, the council and the fishermen, but also the council and the National Marine Fisheries Service and the fishermen and the National Marine Fisheries Service, because there are lots of issues that the fishermen have, but it's not being heard or it's not being prioritized. And so
making changes is tough. I mean, you know, going backwards and try to undo things. That's why we've trying to be estimative lately of having people participate in debates. Like, we had a pretty good fisheries forum. Some pretty good information got spread out, particularly about how age and other things are decided on some of these fish. I saw a lot of people pretty light up. That was a pretty good crowd that came to visit the Alamana. I hope that it comes again next time. What was your thought about that?
Oh, it was a great crowd. We had over 100 people there, and the science was fantastic. These are the kind of stuff that fishermen like, because it comes from the fish, and they can actually see it. They're not theoretical models
there were fish in the room, and some of these groups did the opening up, so that you could see in the ear, you could count the rings. It's like counting a tree, and I think everybody learned a lot of stuff at that, right?
I think so, and I hope some of the fishermen at least got an idea to help and participate with some of these scientists on some of that research.
Yeah, and that was, by the way, and it was really interesting, Molly Lutkovich, who's been on our show before, when we're talking about some of the pelagics and the tagging, she had an issue with the companies making the tags. They had this great expectation, and the stuff just didn't work the way it's supposed to, and it's going to be a while before they can get some more.
Yeah, and I hope we can bring out some of those technology kind of ideas in future forum.
Yeah, and I'm sure we will. Okay, let's switch gears a little bit. As you know, in previous discussions, the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council is the same, and Josh will tell you how many councils there are nationally, I mean, in the country. And the fact that we here out in the Pacific, by leaps and bounds, are way over the square miles of any other section of the council.
Right, by probably an order of magnitude. We have the most easy waters from all the eight councils in the United States.
Does that give us extra help from them with regarding to enforcement and some of the things that we need to do when we have so much ground to cover?
I think for us as a council, it's always been, we don't want more, we want different.
Good point.
We don't get a lot more or any special treatment. We just want to be considered for how we are out here rather than somewhere.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important, you guys and gals, when your chance is to come to a fishers forum or to get some input, to go to wbcouncil.org, find out what's going on, put your manao in there, because the more the merrier as far as information goes. And that brings us to what I want to do today, is introduce a special guest that comes all the way from Saipan. So let's talk about that. We've got people hired by the council that are strewn about the Pacific. What are they expected to do, and how do they get the job?
All right, so we have island coordinators. That's their title out in Guam, American Samoa, and Saipan. And really, there are eyes and ears on the ground in these islands, because we can't be there. There's a 20-hour difference between us and the Mariana Islands. And so we need to be able to have someone on ground when people are awake and offices are open.
Okay, well, let's go ahead. Introduce Floyd.
Yeah, so Floyd Mosca is our CNMI island coordinator. He's from Saipan, a former employee of a bunch of different places, including the fishery agencies.
Yeah, and I would be curious. First of all, Floyd, aloha and welcome. We'd love to have you here. We like getting that flavor from the far reaches of the council's domain. What have you always been interested in the fishery, or what you got you this job?
Well, originally, I was actually the data manager for the Division of Fish and Wildlife.
Okay. And so you've been counting species for a long time.
Counting species, collecting data, as well as fishing, as a family thing as well. And what landed me the job was, of course, the support that came from the administration and from the council. Mm-hmm. And when they made the offer, I totally jumped on it.
Yeah, good for you. You know, I think one thing is another important thing. Every chance we have to talk to somebody comes from as far-reaching part of the council as you do. When you said that, you know, fishing is part of your life, it's not the same with our listeners here. You know, I mean, there would be maybe 20% of our listeners would have part of their lives actually fishing or catching the fish. Most of them, they just go by it. Is the skill of fishing and the fish that you catch at home necessary for your family?
Of course.
Yeah.
It's you augment, in other words, the subsistence needs for the family, food-wise, and you actually, the neat thing about being surrounded by an ocean, the Marianas, is that you can always go out there and either drop a line, go on a boat, go trolling, go bottom fishing, or just cast nets.
Yeah, all of the above. What's your favorite?
Personally, trolling.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like us. I talk about this all the time. If I'm not dragging lure, I'm not a happy guy. And what about supplies? I mean, every time, and this is kind of funny, Josh, remember, at different times we've had different guys in from different far-reaching parts of the council, and it's really funny what they are, when they come here to do the business, what they take home, what they bring, you know. So I guess Floyd, first of all, he's a coin collector, so that's personal, right?
That is.
Yeah, and so that little bag of coins is going home with you. But what do people ask you for? Oh, man, you're going to Hawaii? Well, bring me this, bring me that.
Oh, I'll tell you, the first thing is, are you going to Pops?
Yeah, of course.
Are you going to Pop?
Yeah.
I'm going to need these kind of skirts, and especially we have an upcoming Mahi-Mahi Derby on March 30th. Yeah. So a lot of them are always asking. But, you know, again, being on an island that far away, we are restricted with some of the supplies.
Sure.
And of course, the costs are very high. So we tend to, every time anybody comes to any of these, for example, to Honolulu, you want to go to Pops or any of the stores?
Hey, I can tell you, I've been there many, many times, especially CNMI guys. When they come in there, their eyes are like, they're like a kid in a candy store. They just buy. Yeah. I can understand it. You know, some merchant out there that's not going to sell a lot of volume, he can't afford to sit on the big inventory like they got at Pops. So it must be kind of neat when you get in there to see the array of stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Matter of fact, we went down there just before our advisory panel members left, and some of them forked out $1,000.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. What they say, a boat is bust out another 1,000, right?
That's right.
Okay, but so now, when I was talking to Josh about you coming and visiting with us, Floyd, he was telling me, what is your job description? What are you going to be doing for the council now?
I am the eyes and ears, for the council, especially as Josh mentioned about the time difference.
Yeah.
And meeting, of course, with the state agency is there as well, and helping out the administration, get their needs and requests out to the council.
We have had a great success talking to people in the past, Josh, about what concept other people out there have of this council. You know, in other words, reaching out by having you on board, that means that your area is being represented.
That's right.
And I didn't, Josh, it wasn't always like that, right? There were sometimes far-reaching parts of the council that felt that they didn't have the right voice, and maybe that's getting a little bit better.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things with CNMI is that CNMI really didn't get into the council till about the early
1980s. I was going to say, a couple of decades ago, really.
Right. So the council started in 1976, but because of the position of CNMI, their political position, they weren't a Commonwealth until the 1983 or something. And so that relationship with the United States allowed them to come to the meetings, but they weren't
didn't
actually managed.
Yeah, yeah.
And we actually didn't get the management plans put in place there until, I want to say, 2006, 2005. Because mm-hmm. I remember working on part of it with my colleagues.
Yeah.
And so just having someone there to talk to our council members, make sure that they know what's going on and to work with the administration on everything that all of us come and talk about, data collection, stock assessments, everything.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, for those that don't know, Saipan, by the way, is called sort of the Pico of the CNMI, if you will. It's the big place. What are we talking about in number of islands and coverage? I know it's a lot.
We're talking about 14 islands that stretch up north towards Japan.
Yeah, and so by the way, that's here, we got 8, and they got 14. And the stretch is about the same.
Yes.
In linear miles, right?
Yes. And within the population-wise, yes, Saipan is the largest population. That's where the state capital is. Yep. And as well as you're looking at about, within approximately about 80,000 people.
Yeah. See, I think what's interesting is for people to say that here in Hawaii now, there's almost 1 million on Oahu. And so we're 1.3 or whatever it is. And I'm guessing that sometimes people out in your neck of the woods, oh, those are the big guys. They're not going to pay attention to us. Do you think they will be forthcoming about catches and that kind of thing, the information that you need?
Well, with the current events, yes, of course. Yeah. And, you know, we are affected by what is decided.
And just so that people know, let's make a comparison. What's the biggest part of the fishing, the commercial fleet, is what kind of boat?
You're looking at... to describe it as vessels stretching from 16 footers up to 24.
So obviously, there's not a large presence of local longliners in CNMI.
Not yet.
Yeah. Now that being said, are there people that are aiming at that? I mean, are they taking some of the cash and putting it into, you know, things that are going to help the small fishermen become a bigger fisherman?
Actually, what we have right now is there is one particular company that's looking into it, that's trying to partner up with a Chinese company to open up the long lining business.
Yeah, and Josh, that's kind of interesting, right? Because when you start talking about quotas and numbers and everything, what is not being done leaves that area kind of open temporarily. But once it starts being done, do you envision, you know, a different share or a different way to divide how much tuna is going to come out of that area?
I think the first part is to see what the resource is there, because there have been a couple of long line, I guess, experiments that they tried to go and catch fish. But I think part of it was they weren't people who actually knew where the fish were. They're just like, oh, I got money and we'll go see.
Go fish.
Yeah. Right. And so CNMI actually has its own long law or tuna quota, and whether it's long line or whatever.
Yeah.
And they can actually catch up to, I think, 2,000 metric tons right now. And they've been sharing their quota with Hawaii. And so part of that agreement is to put that funding back from Hawaii back into their fishery
so
that they can start catching their own quota.
So I'm guessing that even though maybe it's not long line acceptable yet, that there'll be other benefits that have happened with boat ramps and with ice and with other things. Because it wasn't the biggest problem, or one of the problems is not... Everybody can go out and catch the fish, but what do you do after that? You know, how do you keep them and how do you sell them? How do you create a market?
Right, and that's a couple of the things that you know, we're still at the early phases with regard to the vendors are at the roadside. For example, and fishermen do sell fish directly to restaurants and hotels.
So just if you can just get this is kind of like it was when I started fishing on the Big Island as a kid. You had a bunch of restaurants that counted on you, and then you had like. It wasn't roadside, but it was kind of, you know, the truck with the scale and the ice. But what would happen is you'd create a demand at the restaurant. And then when you didn't go fishing, the restaurant would get mad at you because you had no fish. So that must be sometimes some of the things that happen there because of maybe not having enough resources.
That's correct. And it happens a lot. It's predominantly, especially during, you know, climactic conditions. Mm-hmm. Weather is a big issue back home. And as you know...
Yeah, you know what? Let's explain that a little bit. Yeah. I mean, here we are. We're so sequestered over here, Josh. We get National Weather Service. We can see it on the satellite. We know what's happening. Those guys, all of a sudden, it just comes.
Oh, yeah. They have it and they can prepare for it, but it happens more often than it does here. And there's... In Hawaii, we've been lucky. We've been... Been able to model things and things are just we can see all the tracks from where they just miss. There you just it's not if a hurricane's going to come, it's when
because
they really have
how you know Floyd, have you always been there? Is that where you're from?
Yes.
So that means that you've had the experience of this a lot of times. I don't think our listeners know just how precarious sometimes things can be. Have you ever had your own homes, the roof go away or anything like that?
I did actually.
Wow.
Yep, and during Typhoon Sotolor, my entire home was destroyed.
And when was that?
This was in 2005.
So that was, you know, that's not that long, 14 years ago, right?
I'm sorry, 2015.
Oh, yeah, 2015. All right, well, but still, I mean, what's it like? I don't think people here know. They, you know, they might have a swing set blow over, or a couple of shingles come off the roof, you know, something. But here it's like gone.
It's gone. Your, yeah. Even your, you know, your entire roof is gone. You have to run away. Mm-hmm. You have to seek shelter, you know, during a storm. And the following day is just, you know, it's like zombie land. You're waking up didn't get any sleep because of all that hard noise coming in from the wind and things hitting the walls or outside.
It must be particularly difficult for kids. I mean, the old folks, they've been around, they've seen it, they know it, right? But for kids.
Yeah, that's the priority, just trying to get them safe in some area of the home, for example.
I have no idea. For instance, let's talk about that and what, like with boat protection. Because like here, some of the big boats, no problem. They hurricanes come in, they let loose the lines and go outside and play in it. But you can't take a small boat out there and expect it to do very well. Now, what happens when the weather's coming? What do they do to protect
stuff? A lot of people, they try to seek shelter within one of the most enclosed marinas, which is Smiley Cove Marina. The other ones take their boats home and hope for the best.
Yeah. Put it on a trailer and hope they don't all fly away. That kind of throws enough a monkey wrench into it. But Josh, maybe that would be a good time to explain to people how we are able in Hawaii, the Hawaii Longline Fleet, to catch these fish in there, and how it is certain that the monies collected are going to improve the fishery. So we're not beholden to them because we're helping them, sort of thing.
And so I think if you think about it in terms of a bowl of marbles, you have a bowl of marbles and there's a certain amount that you can take out, and without losing any more marbles, you can take it out. So what the U.S. does is they take their share and then they say, Guam, Sinamai, American Samoa, you can have however many you want,
right.
and Hawaii, you have just as much. And so when Hawaii uses up all their marbles, they can ask Sinamai, they can ask Guam, they can ask American Samoa, can we borrow some of your marbles?
Sure, yeah.
And so it's all accounted for, all the marbles, because we know how many marbles we have and we know how many are in the bowl. So it doesn't matter if we use it, if Sinamai uses it, or whoever uses it, it's still accounted for. And if they don't use it, it helps.
Yeah, and by the way, gang, this has a lot to do with some of the other science that we use, stock assessments, fishing effort, and all of these numbers that seem to come into play, further accentuating the need for the fishermen, to, when they get a chance, to come up and be, you know, forthright with their information. So these are big decisions.
Oh, and for sure, it's not just a big decision, but there's a lot of stuff that needs to go on in some of these islands. Sinamai, they want to develop their bottom fish fishery. Mm-hmm. So it's, how can we help them to learn to not only fish or help them with getting more fish, but how do you market it? How do you deal with just having a place to launch a boat that you can actually go fishing? And so that's a lot of those projects, or the money from those longline agreements, go towards those type of projects.
So I'm Floyd, let me just, I'm just guessing at this, but I'm certain that everything that is learned there is anecdotally handed down from one generation to the next. So that you probably learned from Pop and Grandpa how to fish, and then later on it's your turn. But things are changing a little bit, you know. Are the people getting lazy? Sometimes they don't want to catch their own because they can go buy it.
Convenience, and you're right. It's convenience. You know, there's not a lot of the youth that are going out there now. It's more of the, let's just go to the roadside vendors, and we do have a lot of contract workers that are actually out there fishing, you know, for certain companies.
The reason why I said that is because, you know, the huge proliferation of canned things in that part of the globe, with, you know, everything is canned, right? Corned beef and all of this stuff with high sodium. So it's not good for people's health. They don't get to eat the fresh fish.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. We do also, from some of the, I guess, the staple diets that people have, we have a large case of diabetes.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking lots of rice and lots of spam and lots of all kinds
that's
of stuff.
Right.
However, I guess maybe the other thing that Josh was talking about, when you say roadside vendors, these guys are going, they're going out in the morning, come back with their catch, sell it on the street?
That's correct. Yeah. Some of them actually go sell directly to a vendor.
Right.
Some of them own the vendors on the side of the road.
So it's not impossible for somebody that says, I want to get a truck, I want to get some scales, I want to buy fish from you guys, and I'll go make my profit by adding on so much.
That's right.
Yeah. Because that's kind of, we don't see this, just the vendors that we used to. Remember, there was always the fresh aqua this and the dried aqua that. You don't see them as much anymore.
Yeah, you see some of those guys on the side of the road. But I think what I've noticed is that when construction is down, there are a lot more because
because they got the skills to catch the fish.
Right. Yeah. Either they're fishing or they're buying from the auction and making fillets and selling them to the friends.
Sure. And listen, that's great. But what I want to make sure people know, when we talked about the CNMI and how many islands you have, for those that don't know, what's the main economy?
Tourism.
Yeah. So, and the tourism, they come there, and what do they want? They want to eat fish.
They want to eat fresh fish.
Yeah. So when you talk about, Josh was mentioning earlier, you guys are working on developing bottom fishing. What are the species that are generally caught there, similar to ours? Paka, onaga, and that stuff?
Yes. Yeah. And one of the target ones, especially with the tourists, they love onaga.
Sure.
For bottom fishing.
And onaga, it caught at what depth there? Is it the same thing, 500-600 feet?
Or more.
Yeah. That being said, when you said we got to give POP some props again, because I do know that a lot of stuff is not available there. So when people come up here, and that must mean that once you develop a trust with the company, you can just say, okay, send me three more of these or five more of that.
And then they do. Yeah. For example, a cooler. You buy the cooler for about $900.
Yeah.
Send it down there for $300.
Yeah.
So they do provide that service.
Yeah, and by the way, if you think that's harsh, it's because it is. The reality is, right? Josh, one make sure that people understand the council's responsibility, that it's like a reach out like an octopus to all these areas, how important it is to have a guy like Floyd or something happening in every area, you know, certainly in CNMI with Saipan.
Oh, yeah, it's so important just to be able to hear what's going on, because whatever... If something happens in their fishery or even natural disaster or something, we need to know so that we know if we need to change the management up in these areas, because we need, because the whole thing is to make sure that people can fish forever. That's the council's motto. And if these folks aren't able to fish, then we don't really have a purpose, right?
Amen. And then the other side of that, Floyd, and you can explain on it a little bit, it's sometimes you have the ability to fish, but not the ability to handle it or market it. You know, if you're too far away, if you live in a village or an area that's too far away, if you catch 50 paka, you can only sell 10.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. But I want to add as well that, you know, the most recent typhoon that we had, which is Typhoon Utu, you know, the council and the members firsthand experienced this. They were there on
Saipan. Were there. Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. I remember that. Explain that, because weren't some of them like freaking out?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Some people have never experienced the kind of typhoons that we have over there. And, you know, when sustained winds of 180 miles an hour.
Holy smokes.
Gusting up to 200. Mm. And, you know, but I got to tell you, the council stood strong. We went with the meeting the whole time. Yeah. Then the storm hit.
Boy, and Josh, I remember when we were talking about that, there were people from here that were like, holy smokes, we've heard about it, we've seen pictures, but it's nothing like it when you're here.
Well, I lived through Hurricane Eva and Iniki,
yeah,
and this was nothing like that. It was so much
more,
right? And we weren't even in the eye,
yeah.
And that's the scary part.
I remember when we talked about that, when you guys first got back, because, you know, like you, Hurricane Iniki and Eva, I was on the air for 3 or 4 days at a time, and you know, and there were, like in Waianae, all the poles were down, but it was only in Waianae, and on Kauai it was horrible, but you know, on the Big Island it was no problem. When you get a storm like in Saipan, if it's anywhere near the middle, you guys are cooked.
We're done. Yeah. We're done, and the power outage just can last up to 3 months.
Oh my goodness!
You're talking about 300 to 400 power poles that are down.
Yeah.
You know, thankfully, FEMA's the response was quick.
And we can't even conceive that, right?
Well, yeah. And then one of our council members, the typhoon was in October. He didn't get his electricity back till Christmas Eve.
That's amazing.
And so that makes fishing even more important.
Yeah, for all of you guys and gals that are listening out there, you walk in the bathroom in the morning when it's dark, you turn on the light, you do your business. How about you turn on the light, there's no light? You know, they got to be pretty strong people, Floyd. You guys got to be resilient.
We are. But we are stressed from all these storms out there.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, what sort of concern are there? You know, everybody says the global warming, the rising temperatures, the seas that are rising. Is CNMI looking at this seriously?
Yes, we are. And, you know, with the help of the federal agencies as well as the council, disaster preparedness is on top of the list.
Yeah. You know, Josh, it seems to me kind of neat. So explain, in addition to CNMI, we got Samoa, we got American Samoa and Samoa.
Yes.
You got the far-reaching, the ring of influence that start. Let's say we start at the CNMI. How does that ripple go out from there?
So you have CNMI, and then you have Guam right underneath it. It's mm-hmm. still part of the Mariana Archipelago,
right,
which stretches down from Micronesia all the way up to Japan, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's on the other side of the Marianas Trench.
Yeah.
Then you go down south, you have American Samoa. Mm-hmm. And then you come up to the top of the Polynesian Triangle with Hawaii. But then in between, you also have Howland and Baker, Jarvis, yeah, Palmyra, Kingman and Wake.
Yeah, and all of these areas, many, many of them are fished. And the population is so small there that there's no problems. There's no misunderstanding about who to catch and where to catch, is there?
I think the main problem is they can fish, but where are they going to send the fish?
Because yeah, exactly.
There's only a set number of stores, set number of restaurants. So what do you do with all that fish?
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, Floyd, because I'm guessing if you were really skilled, that you wouldn't have to fish full time. But that nobody that's, you know, anxious to get ahead of themselves is going to be able to just sit there and not do anything. So what do some of these guys do if they, you know, when, like Josh says, if you know, let's say that something is running and everybody catches 30 mai mai tomorrow, you better not go the next day because you don't need it.
Right. And a couple of the things that will happen is they go back to the cultural traditions, which is passing it out to the family.
Yeah.
Whatever that's left. And that's a loss for the fisher.
Sure.
But again,
That's another thing that people don't understand, right, Josh? Even here, when Uncle goes fishing all the time, and you go over every day to get fish from him, that's taking money out of his pocket. And a lot of our families don't have the ability to say no.
Yeah.
And say, you know, and yet the next day, Papa's got to go buy fuel and ice and everything else to go fishing again.
Well, and some of these island areas, the fish prices are so cheap because you can't sell mahi-mahi for $10 a pound because people can't afford it.
On that, just I don't want people to get thinking they're going to jump on a plane and go down to CNMI right now just to eat. But like, what is it like there, say, for fish? Let's say that we take a tuna, which can range, you know, at $25 a pound at Christmas to $2 a pound in the summertime. What's an expensive fish there?
An expensive fish would be the bottom fish.
Okay.
You're looking about between $7 to $9 a pound.
And with comparable currency, with our currency, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that's up there. But what about the pelagics? What about the mai mai and the ono and stuff?
Mai mai is ranging between $3 to $4 a pound.
Yeah, and then, see, that's less by far than from here, right?
Yeah, you look at even the bottom fish, you know, around Christmas time, you're looking at onaga and opaka paka that are like $32 a pound.
Yeah, it's like, oh my goodness, you're having the big one. You got to put that big red onaga on that plate, for the holidays. You got to make the impression.
Especially now, when it's the Lent season over there, predominantly Catholic.
Yeah, I know. It is not just a Christian community, but pretty much Roman Catholic, so they really follow that. So that means that during the season, right now, during Lent and stuff, huge demand for the fish because they're not eating meat.
Yes, yes.
What is the meat of choice when they are eating meat? Does most of the meat get imported?
Most everything gets imported.
Yeah.
Right. And so within beef, for example, pork, they do have some indigenous people that actually farm and raise cattle and stuff like that.
Here's one. When the tourists come, they have high expectations because it must be in addition to the weather or whatever they're going to do, they're coming there to relax and to eat.
Yeah.
So that must be a pretty good part of it. Do the occupancy rates follow similar to Hawaii rates? I mean, you know, as far as what seasons are busy and what are not?
Yeah, they do. And especially we're relying on the market over in Asia. Japan's holidays, for example, in Korea.
Yeah, Golden Week, from what I understand, is a big deal in Saipan.
It is.
Yeah.
And you're stocked up. People, rooms you can't find.
For those that don't know, what are the prevalent ethnicities there? You know, I mean, the CNMI, what is the population comprised of?
You're looking at, right now, with the contract workers, there's a large population, about 14,000. Then the rest are comprised of little groups of, say, Bangladeshi Indians. But the Chamorros and the Carolinians are
those are the main two groups, right? It's kind of neat, Josh. What do you expect? You know, we got to put the burden of proof on Floyd, right? He's got to go out and do all of this stuff. What does somebody that's working for the council have to do out there?
Well, I think it's mainly that we need them to be able to go talk to the agencies, because we really depend on data from our partners out in the Sinai and Guam and American Samoa and even Hawaii.
Yeah.
So someone needs to be able to talk to their Secretary of Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Sure.
If we need a permit for a project, someone has to do that. If we need to get data so that we can write our reports, yeah, someone has to go and do that. And it's easier for someone to walk over a few offices down than it is for us to call.
Amen. And by the way, I think that one of the most exciting times must be when a new ice facility is going to be dedicated, or when a new ramp is going to be opened, or when some more boats are going to come there. From what I've been told, there's a lot of Ponga-type boats there that are in the... you know, like 18 to 26 feet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And what? And how far are they willing to go? How far out do they go?
They don't, you know, pretty much within the vessel's range or the fuel range, you're looking at about maybe 4 miles to 10 miles.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, outside of that, certainly outside of the 20, there's nobody, unless they are got a bigger boat with more fuel.
Yeah.
So what are you you've been, for those that didn't just join us, that just joined us, I should say, Floyd Maska is he's the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Guy in Saipan, which is in the CNMI. Happy to have the job?
Extremely happy.
And what is the thing that you most want to contribute? Where do you want to be the most valuable to the council?
I want to make sure that the council has that voice, and, you know, I'll be there for that, as well as many other things, but I want to make sure that, you know, the islands are represented as well.
Yeah, pretty cool. Huh? We're lucky we got them, I guess, huh, Josh?
Yeah, very lucky.
Hey, next time we come back in here, let's talk some more, right?
Cool.
Yeah, and by the way, if you want to hear something on the program, you know what to do. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com, right? TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. And we'll be back again next week. In the meantime, if you want to know more what's happening with the council, you get to WPCouncil.org, WPCouncil.org, and see some of the, maybe even our picture is going to be up there after a bit, for what we did today with Floyd and Josh. Have a good one. We'll see you next time. Aloha.